inquiry today. I just want to respond to a question that somebody put on the board. And if you put a question on the board for me, if you put your name, I can reply to you. But I'll reply now. And it says, it refers to the story I told in my talk last night about the young man who stood and faced the crowd of angry people. And it says, sometimes the truth is desire. And so the question was, I think, really about, since he had the desire to keep his job, to feed his family, how was that right view? If I understand the question correctly. Louder? So I probably was not quite explicit enough in my storytelling. So the young man faced the crowd and said, please don't do this, meaning please don't burn the building. If you do, I'll lose my job and I won't be able to feed my family. Yes, this is desire. He had a desire. Yet, when he stood in front of the crowd, he spoke with the voice of peace. Remember what Thich Nhat Hanh said about desire, about right view, sorry? That right view is a living insight. It's an insight into something. It's a way of seeing that's filled with peace and love. On reflection the next day, this young man said to me, I stood there and spoke the truth. Now, truth is that which frees us. We know something is truth if it frees us, brings about a sense of freedom, inwardly and outwardly. In this case, the effect of the truth was the cessation of the violence. The crowd heard, they sensed the presence of this young man. He was standing there. He didn't know at that moment whether he would live or die. He just stood there fearlessly. And the truth of what he said and his presence somehow affected them so that the violence ceased. They went home. So this is truth. Truth has extraordinary power to free. It has extraordinary power to bring about change. That's the difference. Or not.
Not.
Is that better? Okay, I'll move my hair. Okay, thank you. So leaving that there, now we come to our inquiry period. And let's begin with an explanation of the form. There's an empty cushion here. That's for one of you. And the invitation is that you come with a question that has perhaps arisen from your meditation practice, or it might be that you have had an experience that you would like to explore. The inquiry is a dialogue. It's not that someone comes with a question and I then speak for 20 minutes. It's not that. It's an interactive dialogue. And those of you listening are participating with your presence and attention. The purpose of the inquiry is to free the hearts and minds of each of us here. So your listening has extraordinary power to bring about greater depth. And so I would ask you to listen really respectfully both to what's being said outwardly, but also to listen inwardly to your own responses, to the responses of your heart. It might be that sometimes you have a voice saying, oh, Radha should have said that. Why is she doing that? And so on. Or it might be that you're quite deeply touched by what's been said. Because very often the questions that people bring are questions for all of us, questions for each of us. At any time, I may say thank you and ring the bell. And of course, at any time, you may also say thank you and leave. The inquiry sometimes comes to a natural conclusion, and at other times ends with more questions than we started. And the inquiry can go on sometimes for weeks or months or years. The seeing into the nature of things. And of course, inquiry is also one of the factors of awakening. And so its purpose is to see into things. I have a recorder, which is currently on. If you wish it to be turned off, just say so and I'll press the off button. If it is recorded, if I ever get some technical help, it may end up on my website. Hint, hint. So, in between each inquiry, there'll be a quiet few minutes of meditation. And then I'll ring the bell and ask for the next person. So let's just begin by sitting with really quiet, fine attention. Yes, anybody? Yes, come. And if you would please just say your name at the beginning.
Yogesh.
Welcome.
I find that many times that I go into state of meditation, a lot of pain surfaces up, a lot of anger surfaces up. And on one hand, I want to make space for it and I want to allow it to come up and to say the message that it has to say and to move on.
Yes.
On the other hand, I feel like I'm very quickly get attached to the pain and
yes.
get either aversion for the pain. I don't want that, move away, it's off, or attached to the pain.
Yes.
So this also happens.
Yes. So would you like to explore right now? Okay. So just sitting, is there any sense of the anger arising? Yes. Okay. Where in the body does it sit? Where do you feel the sensations?
My jaw.
Yes.
My throat.
Yes.
Not my anus.
Okay, so just sitting rather still and just tracking the sensations. So it's as if we would take really loving attention to the sensations inside the body. So the quality of the attention is, it's full of kindness. It's tender, as if the sensations you're experiencing were something rather precious. Now just track the shifting and changing sensations.
Shifting much more towards the heart area.
Yes.
And your voice lands at my belly.
Okay.
There's some resistance there.
Right. So taking the attention to the heart, never mind my voice, to the heart.
The expansion also, in fact, I'm being very seen.
Yes, of course. But people are helping you. People are sitting rather quietly, very respectfully, very silently. So just feeling the sensations in your heart right now. Can you describe them?
It moves from an expansion of I can, I'm able, I'm allowed.
Yes.
To movement of contraction and I'm not enough, I'm not worthy, I'm not deserved.
Yes. You've leapt ahead already. So these thoughts, I'm not enough, I don't deserve, I'm not worthy. These are the belief or the beliefs or the mental formations that form the anger. So just sitting a little more, attention to the heart.
It gets all over my body. It wants to move and express and release. It's like a very fire.
Fire, yeah, hot. Yeah, anger is hot. Okay, so just, if you would, opening your eyes for a minute, coming back here, have a look out. What do you see?
I see loving eyes.
Yes. 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 Did you know that love is the antidote to anger? Yeah, let it in. And now, the anger?
Still there. Like it wants to move and release and to do a good scream, but also being receptive of the love.
Okay, good, good.
There's both sides.
Yes, yes, agreed. Okay, so let's come back to the first things that you said. The mental formations or the beliefs or those one-line sentences. I'm unworthy. I'm not good enough. Is it true? Is that true?
At some level of my understanding of myself, yes. Ah. It's been running me since.
Ah, yes, it's been running you, but is it really the truth of things?
I know you want me to say no, but
yeah.
My reality, please.
Yes.
I'm attached to this very deeply. Yes. Yes.
And therein, right there, is the difficulty. The attachment to the view, I'm unworthy. Okay, when you look around, do you see a whole bunch of unworthy people?
No.
The unworthiness is here. Totally illogical, isn't it?
No.
Yes. So So sometimes we have this view. We are unworthy. We are unworthy of love. I've not yet met the unworthy person. It's a view, it's an idea. Yes. And it can change. That view can be released. Yes. And so one way of dealing with the anger is to identify the beliefs, which you did super quickly, and then to see whether they're true or not. Of course they are not. So we have to loosen the grip of the mind. The other method of dealing with anger is what we just did here. It's to let the love in. So once again, being receptive to the love that's here in this room. There's care. There's kindness. There's friendliness.
No, I can feel all that, but I can see I can take it into a level.
Yes.
Some capacity.
Yes, so you take it in and then you barricade your heart. So right now, drop the barricade, put it down. Why not? Right now. Just try it. See, even for a few minutes. So we let go into peace. We let go into love. We let go into the freedom. You're just doing it right now. We see the anger. We know the habit mind. We know how the view has solidified and crystallized. It's colored consciousness. It's shaped our life. We've acted according to that belief for many years, often. And yet, there is another way of being. There's something else we can do. We can turn towards our freedom of heart. So right now, just sit in as much freedom as you possibly can. Not holding to the old story of I'm angry and it has to come out somewhere. That could go on forever. Okay, what's happened? What's happening inwardly?
I feel like running away.
Yes. But you haven't, you didn't. You're sitting here. You're brave.
Yeah. I feel very touched and cared and seen.
Yes. Yes. You are touched, you're cared for, you're seen, you're loved. And when you can let that in, the anger falls away. Anger's no longer running you. Anger's no longer the driving force in life.
I feel it's rather the pain more than the anger. I feel like the anger is a symptom more. It's just like my response.
Yes. The anger covers sorrow. That's the next level. So as you explore more using this method that we did, you come to the contraction in the chest. You begin to see beneath the superficial layer of anger and rage and hurt and unworthiness. And then we touch into the deeper sorrow of what it is to be a human being. what it is to live with loss. I'm just waiting for you to respond. It's not a question, but do you have a response?
I feel like it's deeply ingrained in me.
Yes.
I feel like no matter where on earth I'll run to or however spiritual methods I'll try, they would just unravel more and more pain that is either mine or belongs to somewhere in the past. But
yes. Who feels that in the room? That there's tons of pain in this world, inwardly and outwardly. Lots of people. Okay? You're in good company. Okay? We would all like to run from our pain, but we know that wherever we go to, the self comes. We come with ourselves and we come with the habits. We come with our entrenched patterns of behavior, ways of being. Yet within you, you come to a meditation retreat. Do you have any sense that there is freedom?
Yes, 100%.
Ah. Louder, please.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So there's 100%. Knowing that there is freedom.
Yes.
So therefore, your pain and sorrow will not always be with you. There is freedom. There is an end. There's an end of suffering. This is the Buddha's teaching. And we can know it. We have to let go of the idea my suffering will never end. The view, I'm stuck with this. I'm angry. I'm sad. There's pain everywhere. That view needs to cease. Because what we do is we cling to the conditioned view. Whenever we cling to one condition, we cling to another condition, thinking it might be better, and another idea, and another idea. What we need to see is the inner shift. The turning towards the freedom. You know it in your heart. You know it's true. So you have to listen to that aspect of yourself. Listen deeply. So right now, one more time, sitting in freedom. Right now, here and now. Sit in the truth of the realization that there is freedom. It is possible. It's possible. Yes.
Now I feel the momentary barrier for me is me accepting the fact that it's moment, like that it's temporary, or that it's
yes,
not yet there, or it's coming.
Ah. That what's coming?
Freedom. Yeah. The end of sorrow, the end of pain.
Yes, yes. Okay. Have you had a single moment on this retreat where you felt completely free?
Probably yes. I cannot point it out.
Yeah. Probably yes. Even a moment of freedom is a moment of nibbana. We have to keep turning towards it until that becomes our life. So then we know that which is unconditioned, not bound to the conditions. You told me you know 100% there is freedom. Touch it. Let it touch you. Sit in it, rest in it, turn towards it.
That triggers lots of things.
Me saying that?
Me tapping into freedom, or into the possibility of freedom.
Uh-huh. And if it triggered lots of pain, what would happen?
I theorizes that the pain will take over.
Yes. Yeah. So there's fear of the pain.
During pain, yes.
Yes. Yes. So one part, one inner voice is saying there is freedom. I know there's freedom. The other part is I'm afraid that I'll be overwhelmed by the pain. What do you know about the heart? What do the Dharma teachings tell you about our heart? Can we not embrace both joy and sorrow? Yeah, exactly. We have the capacity to be with the pain. Also to know the end of the pain and find the release to freedom. This is the path. This is the way. And we start as we began by putting tender, loving attention and continuing the exploration. And we give up the view that I can't be free and I'm stuck somehow in anger. It's just a view. And it's fueled by the beliefs I'm unworthy, I'm not good enough, I'm inadequate. They're just beliefs. They're empty, they're invisible. They're thought formations, that's all. See it until it really rings true. And in the meantime, let the Sangha support you. Let the love in. Thank you. Yes, anybody? Yeah, come.
Hi, my name is Ella.
Welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to discuss about two qualities. That the know nothing and the know everything.
Ah,
you talk about it yesterday.
Yes, yes. So, say again the two qualities.
Like to know nothing, like a child. You like, coming?
Innocence?
Yes.
So, the innocence?
Yeah. And the deep knowledge that we have inside.
Yes.
That we know things.
Okay. So, say a little more.
So, I can see some chair, and I can see about a lot of stuff. But I can see what it came from.
Yes.
Who built it, or what I can remember about it.
Yes.
And also, I can see it like I'm seeing it the first time.
Yes.
And I want to be like the curious and adult.
Yes.
Together.
Yes.
And to see stuff clearly with the known, but without judgment.
Yes.
And there is something sometimes that I can't attach exactly to be to different between, but how to keep both together.
Okay.
To be like the woman that knows everything and she's like just an idiot.
Arrogant. Yeah.
Like I know everything. I don't need you. And also like to see things like it's the very first time.
Yes.
That I know things, so I can't see it for the first time.
Okay. So, as I understand you, there's the two qualities. One is a deep knowing. So we're not talking about the arrogance of I know best and so on. We're talking about a deep knowing. And in this deep knowing, is there a connection to everything?
Yes.
Yes. So this is the deep knowing where we have the sense of I am everything.
Yes.
I am connected to all things. Okay, so this is one sense, one experience we can directly have when we sit and in everyday life. The deep knowing of our interconnectedness. Okay, so that's one aspect. The other is to see that we are no thing. To see as if we were innocent and fresh, to see the new, to see not grasping to any concept or idea. Your turn.
Just to see things like they
are. Yes, to see things as they have come to be, as they are, as it is.
Yes.
This is called the suchness of things. We just see things as they are. Yes, clear seeing.
So when I see something,
mm-hmm.
I need to jump between two qualities.
Yeah. This is a sense. Nisargadatta, the Advaita teacher, said something famous, if I can remember it. He said, love tells me I am everything. Wisdom tells me I am nothing, I am nothing. Between these two poles, my life swings. Okay? So our task is not to see the two qualities that you have mentioned as a duality.
Not to see
them? Yeah, not to see them as opposites.
Okay.
We have the sense when we see with the eye of wisdom, E-Y-E, of wisdom, we see the emptiness of all things. Is that what you meant when you said you see the chair and the conditions that formed it and so on?
Yes.
So we understand from the point of view of wisdom, the emptiness of all things. We understand from our felt sense of interconnectedness, our connection and being part of the totality of things. What's the felt sense that comes with that? When you really feel part of the totality of things, what's the felt sense? Yes? Calm? Yes? What else? Yes?
And I think it's really important for everything to just
like mm-hmm. Everything is just everything, that's true. Okay. So when you are connected to all things, what's the insight that emerges from that? When we have the sense of being connected, what does it mean? We're connected to all things, everybody.
So it's part of us.
Yes. Therefore.
Therefore we have a connection.
Yes. No. No. Therefore. We're connected. What is the insight from that connection or from that understanding of the interconnected nature of all things? What does that tell you about how to live?
Harmony.
Yes, to live with harmony. What else?
Gentle.
Yes, to live with gentleness, to live with kindness, to live with love.
Curious.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. When we see the emptiness of all things, we're seeing that all things exist independence upon previous conditions. Mm-hmm. True. This is how we see and understand freedom in the relative world. Our freedom needs to be known both relatively in terms of what's called dependent arising in the teachings, and also ultimately. But next step, the two are not separate. So don't make an opposition of the two different perspectives of seeing. You're describing life from two different perspectives. They don't need to be in opposition. Mm.
So can I need to see everything together?
Mm-hmm.
Not opposite.
Yes.
Because this chair is both. Is part of everything.
Yes.
And it's new because it depends on what we can see for.
Yes.
I can see that and hold everything together.
Stop there. You can see and be with things without clinging, without grasping. There's the key.
Without
grasping.
So it is.
Yes. Yes. Not making a division, not making it into two. There's two perspectives, yes, but there's release. Right there. When we don't cling to a standpoint. When we don't cling to a way of seeing, there's release. You just felt it.
Yes.
You just felt it. That's it. Right there is the freedom. I'll just offer a short reflection on the inquiries today. The first one, sometimes in life we feel anger and it comes with heat through the body, it comes with a charge. We all know this. We need to see how anger is constructed and formed. The anger is formed through ideas and beliefs. More specifically, clinging to ideas and beliefs. And very often when we start to, through this method of touching into the sensations in the body with tenderness and kindness, very often those beliefs become rather clear, as we heard earlier. And the beliefs are these little one-line formations. They're called mental formations, and there are things like, I'm unworthy, I am not deserving of love. They are incredibly painful. They shape and color consciousness. If you perhaps reflect on your life, you can see where you've been doing this. Many of you will have done this. And of course, if we start to look a little deeper, we also see that often our anger is a response to our sorrow, to our pain, to our anguish, our despair. So we need to see how the anger is formed. Anger requires a sense of self, the idea or the notion of a separate sense of self to stay in place. The other method of dealing with anger is, as we saw, beautifully demonstrated, it's to open to the love that is here. When we turn to our capacity for feeling rather free, this knowing within us that there is freedom, actually, 100% we heard, there's the knowing within us. When we turn towards that knowing, the anger fades, the anger dissolves, the anger ceases, the anger no longer rules our life. This is release. This is freedom. And so we work in this way with our strong emotions. We don't deny them or turn away from them, because our heart has this extraordinary capacity to be with joy, to be with sorrow, to be with pain, to be with despair, yet also to know our extraordinary depth of wisdom that we can have as human beings, to know that we can be free, to know that sorrow can end. We don't have to be bound to it. These are the teachings. It's a turning from our habitual patterns, the habit mind, to the new, to the freedom itself, to release. And it's a delight when I see someone sitting here next to me and there's just this lovely kind of loosening up when clinging ceases. It's such a joy and it's so precious. So when we just let go, we let go into peace itself. And then with the second inquiry, sometimes we have the sense of being connected to all things. And with this sense usually comes a sense of love, a sense of interconnectedness. On the other hand, when we see with wisdom, when we look and explore the emptiness teachings, when we understand that every event, everything occurs due to causes and conditions, and when we start to see that right here and now, with the chair, with every object, with ourselves, with every feeling, with every emotion, when we start to see that, we know the emptiness of all things. So this is to see with wisdom. And as Nisargadatta said, this great Indian sage and saint in the Advaita tradition, wisdom tells me I am no thing. It doesn't mean I'm nothing, but it means not to cling to any particular thing. So when we really see, we see the world of objects as impermanent. We don't see objects as solid. We actually see the emptiness of all things. This is the wisdom that he was referring to. Now, you may not understand that right now. You may not have a clue what we were talking about. Don't worry. It's okay. It's day two of the retreat. Before the end, you will have a better idea what I'm referring to. So there are these two ways of looking. One, we look and see our interconnectedness. The other, we look and see the emptiness of all things. We see and understand the emptiness of dependent arising, how things come into being. We get that. And we also see the totality of things, that we are part of the totality. We're not separate. So then we start to see the immeasurable. The Buddha spoke about freedom that's known in the relative world, the everyday world, and also ultimate freedom. So we need not to divide our viewpoint. In the Sutta Nipata, he says, truth is one without a second. So ultimate and relative truth are simply two different ways of looking. We have to see that truth is one without a second. And this is the release we saw there. Thank you very much for your attention, those who listened, and of course to the two who spoke. Thank you.